Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guests today are Chris and then Maria Polaris. Chris is a parent of an 18-year-old desisted daughter, and we'll talk about what the word desisted means later. She got involved in the gender identity fight 3 years ago when her daughter declared she was really a boy and declared a new name and pronouns. A lifelong lefty, she had no idea what was really happening with transgenderism and gender identity. Despite the fact that her child has desisted, she continues to work to provide information and resources through Cardinal Support Network for other parents who are suffering. Maria Polaris is a mother of a transgender, sometimes non-binary, identifying runaway daughter who is partially transitioned and is viewing life only through a transgender lens. This event fueled her search to find out why this happened and where the influences originated. She's connected with many parents who've had the same experience at the hands of a local gender clinic. Many are themselves doctors, psychologists, and lawyers. Together, they search for evidence that would help them support her and love her, help her support her and love her daughter, without necessarily agreeing as they wait for her brain to fully develop. They found nothing substantial except for the Danish study that concluded post-transition, the suicide rate increased by 19 times. Maria has traveled to Baltimore to speak to the Catholic Church officials, to Washington, D.C. to share her story with the hope of warning government officials, educators, and anyone who will listen that a medical catastrophe is taking place, and it's imperative that these children and vulnerable adults be protected. Through www.parentsofrogdkids.com, Maria was introduced to Chris. Maria is a conservative who loves nature, connecting people, and recruiting like-minded citizens who will tell their stories in an effort to get better long-term healthy outcomes for these kids. After she met Chris, together as mothers, they have become friends in a gender battle that will have, and is already having, many casualties. The website is set up to help parents like us get our children the help they need, recruiting therapists, doctors, and lawyers who will defend these kids' rights to healthy, sexually functioning bodies as adults. And I want to mention one more thing before we go, which is the Cardinal Support Network, which we mentioned, is an Ohio-based parent and caregiver support network for those with loved ones who have been taken in by the gender identity juggernaut. They provide scientific, fact-based information on the medical harms of transition. They provide parents, partners, so that when they need help, they can call, email, or meet up with someone else who understands what they're going through, and they're working to provide support for detransitioners in the area. Additionally, they're working on legislation to help reverse the rule that disallows providing standard therapy for gender-confused young people. So first off, thank you for your work in the world, and second, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So can we start by, there's all sorts of terms to define, like detransitioners, gender-confused, and so can you talk about those, and also more basically, I guess, talk about the Cardinal Support Network and the parents of ROGD. Kids.com.
Yeah. So, you want terms first? Desisted or detransitioned means that somebody was identifying as trans, and at some point on their path, they ended up figuring out that they're really just the sex that they were born, and that's okay. And they can present any way they want, but it doesn't change reality. That's the basic. Cardinal Support Network, though, we launched our website in January, but that Maria and I have known each other for about 3 years, about the time that my kid declared that she wasn't a she. And the Ohio group has grown kind of exponentially all over the state. We've got people from just about everywhere in the state. And I know, like, my biggest problem when we were first confronted with this was lack of a clearinghouse for good information, especially locally. Access to therapists who might be willing to buck the system, and good science, because none of it made any sense to me when it sort of smacked me in the face. So we started talking about it. You know, we get together, you know, a few times a year, and we have the capacity to call each other and talk when we're having troubles. But the website was a way for us to collect information from parents, for one thing, and So we're kind of building some information on the back end about what these kids are like, and then to be able to connect parents to each other and to the hard science that by and large debunks the whole idea of being trans. We also can privately provide information on therapists who are willing to help, doctors who might be willing to help, that kind of thing. But it's locally based because the national and international sites are great. But when you're desperate to find a therapist locally, you really need the help. And it's just good to be able to call somebody who's, you know, who lives in your same city and go get coffee or go get dinner and commiserate. And you just need help. You need support because it's like getting, it's like the bottom falling out when your kid tells you this. And the first year for me was just like a giant nightmare. You know, you feel like you're dying by inches.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So, and we all came together, most of us anyways, through Parents of ROGD Kids, after most of us hit fourth wave now. there's information on there about Parents of ROGD Kids and they connect people from all over. And that's how we met, along with a whole bunch of other parents in the state. So you can talk about that, Maria?
Sure. Yeah. So that's really how I signed up. I was just pretty miserable. I really couldn't find anybody who I wanted to talk to about it. And, you know, the affirmation only approach, even people like from my community here, even psychologists that I know that are my friends even said, well, you need to affirm this identity. And I kept asking why, because first of all, she's not my son. She was my daughter. And even the hospital said that when she went to get help, you know, I thought she was getting mental help and I was excited about it because she was a little older. She was over 18 and there was really nothing I could do. She was in college. So I wasn't the least bit afraid because she went to a children's hospital and she was on medication for depression. And I just made the assumption that they would talk to her. And I was also fearful of a trauma that might have happened because it didn't come out of the blue when she was 18. She kind of started this as a senior in high school. With a couple other girlfriends, they were doing these male identities online, and it didn't really occur to me that it was, you know, I didn't know about a lot of it, but at the time, but I just figured it was like a teenage thing that kids did, and she's super creative and just gifted, you know, and smart, and I just figured she'd just kind of grow out of it and find someone to talk to about what was really bothering her as a female. And, you know, a year later, she ran away. They unfortunately set her up with a mentor who was a lot older than she was, like 6 years, and another female to male person, several actually, that coached her and cheered her on. And pretty much convinced her that since we were questioning it, that we were the enemy. And, you know, our point was, you're 19. Let's get through college. Let's get you to be the age of wisdom, which would be 25 or older. And then if this is something you really feel strongly about, then go ahead and do it. I'm not going to say that I disagree. I don't have any that I agree with her, but because I don't. Based on my knowledge of just the Danish study itself, post-transition, that these people are committing suicide 19 times the average of the person who doesn't commit suicide and or actually gets the mental help they need. So, you know, I was just in a state of fear pretty much. And, you know, after talking to doctors and you just tell them, hey, this is my daughter. This is what's going on in her life. She's depressed. She's got anxiety. Those things skew reality and they need to be addressed. But instead it was, if you don't confirm and affirm her that she's your son, then she's going to kill herself. And that was like, that was just the ultimate coercive, you know, fear mongering. And this is something that goes on. And I've heard that the same clinic has marched 100 parents in a room and said the same exact thing to all of them. And it's just a one size fits all approach, which they call affirmation, which means that even in court, the head of the gender clinic in my town admitted that they transition 100% of the kids that come in, even though on their website, it is a well-known fact that if given the right mental health therapies, that 85 or more, 90 probably percent of these kids would get through their difficulties given the right mental health care. And this is in a custody battle of parents like us who were fighting the wrong sex hormones. And that was in 2015. And that's really what kind of woke me up. I was like, oh, okay. I'm not crazy, actually. This is something else. And it's very scary for parents like us who want to be anonymous or have to be anonymous, because they'll come after us. They'll come after Chris. They'll come after her job. And it's the doxing that goes on and the harassment that goes on. It's just crazy. And just because why? Because we don't want our kids on steroids. Like for girls, these are the steroids that the East Germany athletes used, you know, in that whole scandal. And these girls didn't even know what was happening to them because they were kids, they were children. And then as adults, they, you know, they're sterile and they had no idea what was going on. And that's what's going on now, which is just weird that the United States is putting up with this. And because we're afraid of a few, you know, trans activists who are pretty powerful. They are. So that's really where we're coming from. It's not that we hate trans people or that we're transphobes. You know, we're parents that are just trying to get our kids the best support available, not just go, oh, yeah, OK, she's born in the wrong body. You're right. I mean, that is just ridiculous what they're trying to get us to agree to.
Well, and you can imagine what that does to a kid's psyche to have somebody affirm that their body is wrong. So parents of ROGD kids was like one of the first places that I think either of us went to that were seriously questioning this as the only method for treatment. And they provide a way to connect people, which is great.
Yeah, they protect people they connect people by geographical area, and they're international. And in fact, we're all comparing notes. There's another group of medical professionals, and it's called SEGM. It's Society for Evidence-Based Medicine. And these are all the people that have left Tavistock because of the abuse that was going on of these kids. And they just couldn't take it anymore. So, yeah. And they've been silenced by the media, too. I mean, they've done plenty of commentaries on studies that the activists are using, you know, stating that, oh, they're going to all kill themselves. That's a lie, too. You know, but even the medical associations are actively silencing people who comment against what they're saying. It's ridiculous.
So I have a few possible directions to go.
Okay.
One of them is that just to say explicitly that both of you are using pseudonyms and to talk about the reasons for that. And before we go, well, let's just start with that, and I'll ask the other questions later. So you're both using pseudonyms, and you know, I'm going to ask you why. But before I'm going to ask you why, I'm going to say that because I don't agree that males who identify as transgender, well, I'll put it this way. I don't believe that women should be forced to share their most vulnerable spaces with males who identify as transgender. I have lost 3 publishers and I have received countless death threats. And the women I know have received countless rape and death threats. And so many men and women I know have their lives and careers destroyed. And do you want to talk about at all why you chose to use pseudonyms?
Yeah, I'll go first real quick. About a year or so ago, somebody at my institution made some unfortunate comments that were gender critical. She used a little cursing in there, so that didn't go over very well. But it was definitely sort of gender critical minded comments on social media. And she got reported to a local politician who then contacted the head of my institution, and she was quite promptly let go. At that point, I stripped my social media of all work and school information, and I changed my profile name. because I post lots of things that are, you know, gender critical and pro women and pro kids, even though that's, you know, not popular. You can't escape the ideology right now. But I was like, I can't afford to lose my job. It's not possible. We would be living in our car if I did that. And I wouldn't be able to get hired. So for right now, I have to stay anonymous. There's just no way around it.
Just 2 nights ago, I was talking with a friend of mine who is a professor at a university who said to me explicitly that she cannot say that she does not support the so-called Equality Act because she will lose her job at the university simply for opposing a piece of legislation. And she also can't say that woman equals adult human female at the university, because if she does, she will lose her job. And I just want to point out how extraordinary this is, that a university professor cannot oppose – a university professor should be able to oppose any piece of legislation they want. It's just legislation. And that's what people do, is they oppose or support legislation. And also, a person should be able to state biological reality, and she would lose her job for either of those.
Yeah. How heretical of you.
Well, and it's compelled speech, you know, and that's the same thing. I also went to a really liberal college, and, you know, I can honestly say I was probably a Democrat for a while, and it would be sure. Well, so many people would be shocked by that one. But yeah, and I just, you know, I was just used to being able to say what I wanted to say. And especially women not being able to say, okay, yeah, well, trans women are not women. They're males masquerading as women. They like to dress up as women. You know, they can modify their body, but their DNA is male. And that's a well-known fact. It's called gametes. I mean, it's pretty simple stuff. And the more I got into this and the more that I looked and researched, it's really a male domination sort of ideology. And even if you look at the hierarchy, the trans men are at the bottom. The trans women are at the top. You know, it's like the women, the biological females have gained 0 from this. You know, the trans women are taking the sports. The trans men can't, because they physically can't. And it blows my mind when you even hear a girl say, well, whatever, it's okay, I don't care. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me. And I think it's because these United States kids never had to battle for their freedom. I mean, they have they're so overprivileged, and they get everything they want, and their parents don't want them ever to struggle, you know, and they give them everything. And our family really hasn't been like that. Even if we could, we don't. We just kind of have them solve their own problems. And this is one of those problems that, you know, it's an adult decision. And so it's their responsibility. It's not my responsibility to help with something I don't agree with and that I think is bad. And that's out of love. It's not out of hate. You know, that's how they flip it around. They say, oh, she must not really love her daughter. I've had that said about me when I talked about this bill that we tried to bring in last year, you know, and the other person they interviewed was Olson Kennedy, who is in the process of has completed bilateral mastectomies on little girls as young as 8 in California, because she believes that they're really boys. They're not really girls. And if they don't like it, they can go get some. They can go get them back. You can't go get it back. I mean, these people are crazy, you know, and I'm the bad parent. That's what blows my mind. I'm the bad parent just because I'm questioning why. And I'm like, well, I'd like to see a study. I'd like to see the results of that study. What evidence do they have that any of this is going to work out well? And the fact is, since 2015, these kids are now getting older and it's not working out well. And that's the problem. And these people know it, and they're going to cover their butts about it as much as they can. That's what they do. It's just crazy.
So let's talk explicitly. Let's talk explicitly for a moment about the surgical treatments, as it were. The California Insurance Commissioner called women or girls' breasts abnormal growths, and that's in an official document, called them abnormal growths that should be removed. And we also had an entire nation celebrating the removal of a young male's genitals. And I can't get over the horror of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just don't understand how our media is so behind this. I really don't understand it. And you have to look at where the money's coming from. And it's really big pharma. It's coming from big pharma. It's coming from, there's a lot of money being put into it by different very rich families that have put money into it. I think the Pritzker is one of them. Yeah. Jennifer Bilek, or is it Bilek? She kind of outlined that. And money, it really is about money. And this is their cash cow. And cash cows don't last, but they make a lot of money for many, many years. I mean, just look at the smoking industry, you know, and how they marketed to kids. And then all of a sudden, hey, wait a minute, they're marketing to kids. Well, so is this. You've got the cereal boxes, you've got Blue's Clues, you know, the gender unicorn, the gingerbread man. I mean, this is marketing to kids. It's crazy. But yeah, absolutely. I don't know how these surgeons are getting through the ethics doors by what they're doing to these kids. I really don't. I don't see how it's going to be sustainable.
Well, and Olson Kennedy is in California, and she has an NIH grant to pursue this on cross-sex hormones on kids as young as 8. Bilateral mastectomies on 12-year-olds, and everybody thinks it's great. And I don't understand it either. I can't imagine any sane parent or rational parent, maybe not insane, but rational, thinking that it's a good idea to allow your kid to chop up their body and get rid of parts that they haven't even had an opportunity to get used to, let alone at some point as adults use. They've created lifelong patients, period. There's no way around it. And so there is a lot of money in it, because if you can, the surgeries, especially if you, decide to have phalloplasty, that's not a one-off deal. There's usually repeat surgeries involved in that. Necrotic tissue, scar tissue. And then, of course, once you have a penectomy, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. There's no going back on that. And yeah, on television, you know, they had a cake. They ate a penis cake to celebrate a penectomy. It was mortifying as a parent, because I can't imagine doing that to my kid. When when we first stuck mine in therapy, she was fairly annoyed with us. I'm using nice language because we did not we did not take her to the gender clinic, even though I was quite clear with her that we were not going to do that. Her therapist ended up basically treating it kind of like anorexia. And well, my child has never come out and said, I was wrong. I'm not trans. She did admit to me that she had some disordered thinking that was not helpful to her. So therapy does work if it's allowed to work, because thinking that you're in the wrong body, that's a disordered thinking problem right there. But that's not a long-term moneymaker to go into therapy, as opposed to if you put her on, you know, testosterone, because then pretty soon you're going to have to be treating her for heart troubles, possible strokes, possible, you know, heart attacks, bone density problems, arthritis. Those are, you know, you're on the hook at that point. So it's hard not to think about it as a money question. But they're doing irreparable harm to children. And it's just unthinkable.
Yeah. And one thing that one of the parents shared with me was that her daughter was told that she needs to learn how to survive in a world as trans that hates her. Can you imagine a clinic, a children's hospital telling a kid that you're trans, which is a label, you know, I hate labels. And this is your life. You are diagnosed. You are trans. And you know, these kids are depressed. These kids have these terrible traumas. She was abandoned when she was a child, and her grandparents picked up the slack and raised her. And, you know, she, all of her trauma counseling went out the door. It was all about, okay, now we're going to go ahead and put you on your path for transition. And this is going to solve your problems. It's basically the magic pill, and this is going to work. And there is a euphoria. I mean, for the first 6 months or so, you know, testosterone does have its effects on women, and you feel powerful and you feel stronger and your body's changing. And then after a while, it really starts to kill your body because it doesn't belong there, especially the high level of dosage that's required to have a beard. I mean, it's just that's what they want. They want these beards. And I, you know, that's extremely high level of testosterone, higher than normal in males. When, you know, and on our website, it'll say, and it, there's studies out there, testosterone is not approved really by the FDA for even males, let alone for this purpose for females. And neither is estrogen for males in sports. to compete against females. That's what our state requires, and some of them do and some of them don't, that these boys be on estrogen for a year, thinking that that makes them weaker and therefore on an even playing field with females. And that absolutely makes no sense. It's like they're building this group of drugged kids. And I'm really, really concerned. And I know that our parents are too, about our kids. What is going to become of our kids?
So here's a criticism from the other side, that they, and I just heard this argument yesterday. They will argue that, and I obviously don't agree with this, but they will argue that people today simply don't accept those who identify as transgender, like people at one point would be outraged if their child turned out to be homosexual. And they will argue that, in fact, this is pretty much their only argument, that those who don't agree that a little boy who likes to play with dolls is, that if you don't agree that a little boy who likes to play with dolls is actually a girl, then you are a hateful bigot and your child essentially needs to be taken away from you and you should not have any sort of therapy to attempt to get the little boy to simply be happy being a little boy who likes to play with dolls, is what they would classify as conversion therapy, and that would be bad. And we agree that it, well, just take this anywhere you want to go.
I'll just hop in here real quick. My same-sex partner and I for the last 20 plus years. So that's my perspective. This is the most homophobic movement I have ever seen in my life. It's like, it's a cover. it's a way to be happily homophobic. So from my perspective, like my kid's orientation does not matter to me one little bit. It's whatever she's happy with. But to tell a child that they're not their sex just because they're unusual, that they've really targeted a particularly autistic kids. So I forget what the general numbers are on autism and sort of the greater population, but I think Tavistock was keeping track of it, and something like 30% of the kids who were coming through GIDS, the gender identity clinic, were autistic to some extent. My own child was finally diagnosed with that in this past winter. After kind of a longish battle, because we kind of knew there was something up, and a new therapist, pegged it pretty quickly. She's very high functioning, very high IQ, super smart, but awkward and not typical as females go. It never occurred to me in a family from a long line of fairly atypical females, that this was ever going to turn into a thing. But they at school spend so much time talking about it, and it's just, it's veiled homophobia. It's so sexist. I mean, even if your kid isn't homosexual, and that's hard to tell until they kind of grow up enough to figure it out for themselves. The sexism inherent in this, to tell a girl who's good at math. I mean, I thought we were past that in the 80s, maybe. But clearly it's come raging back. It's the most disappointing thing for me, particularly as a woman. To see how this has played out.
I think this is incredibly important. Can you please absolutely, totally nail down how this movement is homophobic and sexist?
So
be really explicit.
Okay, so
clear.
I mean, so the dark joke at Tavistock, because they're documenting better than anybody here in the U.S., the dark joke at Tavistock was, there will be no gay kids left by the time we're done with them, because parents were coming in, and we know of some here in the States, parents were coming in, and they were not very happy that their kid might be gay. But it was great if, in fact, they were just born in the wrong body. Mm-hmm. So that means, you know, little boys who like to play with dolls, who could just be sensitive, but might be gay eventually. Who can tell? It was far preferable, and parents reported this, that they'd rather have a girl than a gay boy. Or vice versa. They'd rather have, you know, a son than a lesbian daughter. And so this is like homophobia from the parents, and the trans thing gives them a cover to make it okay. So disturbing. Is that explicit enough for you?
Well, and it's the conflation between sexual identity and gender identity, you know. Or sexual orientation and gender identity. I'm more on the Christian conservative side, and I'm sitting in a group of parents who are upset that their kids are gay and lesbian, and I was like, you guys are lucky, man. I mean, I wish my daughter was a lesbian. I wish she'd just say it and just do it and not be hurting her body. That's the difference. The expectation is that you will take testosterone, you'll have the bilateral mastectomy, and if you're really, really troubled, or you really need it, you know, to what, pee like a man and have a phalloplasty? I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I'm a tomboy growing up. I hated girl stuff. I grew up with boys, and my best friend was the most feminine kid, male, that you've ever met. He knitted with me. We did all kinds of girl stuff. He played Barbies with me, and my parents would just kind of laugh because they were like, he's probably gay. And he was. My parents just didn't really say anything because they really couldn't help me understand it. And I didn't really care because, you know, he was my best friend and we were just interested in the same stuff. And I played baseball too with all the boys. So, and I was good at it. So for anybody to tell me that, okay, you shouldn't be on a co-ed soccer team. You shouldn't like math. You shouldn't be good at any of this stuff because that's what boys do. That's what boys like. Boys like video games. Girls don't. That's just not, you know, I've heard parents say this that want to transition their kid based on their interests, not on anything else. And I was just listening last night to a couple, and we have a trans lobby. I call them a trans lobby. These parents they have an effeminate son, and he wanted to wear dresses. And so guess what? Oh my gosh, he's got to be a girl. And he didn't like sports, so he's got to be a girl. And to listen to his father talk really with contempt that his son didn't like sports and that he must be a girl then, that's homophobic. You know, that's about as homophobic as it gets. And in my profession, just what the training I took, this was not part of my training, and it is now. I mean, now it's like you have to use all their preferred pronouns. And you have to be really careful. It's just, and it's in the schools as well. And these kids believe us. These 4 and 5 year olds. This is when this kid was saying that I love dresses. He loves his mother. You know, he wants to be with her. He loves her. These are the stages that kids go through. And it just blows my mind that no one's looking at the parents. The parents that are mentally ill here, the parents that are homophobic. I just don't understand why why we are where we are. And it just seems to be getting worse. So, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So really, Christians don't, you know, if you're a Christian and you got a kid in this, you know, I've heard people say, well, they're going to transition because they want to look like a heterosexual couple because the Christian in-laws don't want it to look weird. They don't want to see two lesbians in a relationship. And that just breaks my heart.
So I guess I got a couple questions. And feel free to ignore this first one if you want. We've got 6 or 7 minutes left.
Okay. And
the first question is, I did an interview with Graham Linehan about how so much of this going after the children is really social grooming into this ideology. And if you want to go there, that's fine. And if you would rather not, that's fine too. And in any case, I would like for you to talk about a little bit more about your organizations. And especially, I have a friend who just told me 3 days ago that her daughter, who has undergone horrific sexual trauma, abuse by the father, the ex-husband of the woman, horrific sexual abuse by him, then you can kind of predict how the rest of this story goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
She herself is horror stricken that her daughter she loves so much is going down this path of permanent body alteration. I don't know what I'm asking here. Am I asking? Maybe I'm asking, if this woman were talking to you, what would you say to her? I don't know. So take grooming or your organizations or help this woman or all three.
Yeah, well, the grooming is definitely a thing. And a lot of that is social media driven. A lot of the detransitioners talk about that, how it kind of got trapped in these online communities. It's kind of cult-like because even if these kids who think that they're trans, even if they question it, they get jumped on. So there's no wrong think allowed. And then, you know, they introduce it to preschoolers, kindergartners, as if this is a normal way of life to think about the fact that at some point you might want to have healthy tissue removed from your body because mm-hmm. your body might be wrong. I mean, that it's a double whammy to even introduce the idea that their bodies are wrong.
Which, by the way, if you just one thing ahead. Real quick, which is if you A, perhaps are feeling a little bit out of your body through autism. I know that happens. Or right. feeling out of your body through having been abused, because that's
absolutely
dissociation. Then
right.
it's like, oh, here's a solution. The reason I feel out of my body is not because my father was raping me. The reason I feel out of my body is because I was actually born in the wrong one.
Yeah, there's a really great book that you should have her look at. It's called The Body Keeps the Score, and it's Brain, Mind, Body, and the Healing of Trauma. And it talks about that very thing, that trauma puts your body really and your mind in a state of self-preservation to the point where I could really see it. You know, she doesn't want another man near her right now. So what better way to repel than to really take all of the aspects of a woman that a male would want to look at and just destroy that part of yourself? But that book, I've read the book. A lot of people who stopped transition are saying, I read this book, it opened my eyes. I can't believe that the therapist didn't ask me or didn't say, hey, what about this trauma? You know, what about trauma? Why don't we focus on that rather than focus on trying to run away from it? let's try to focus on, you know, reconnecting with that little girl that was raped and, you know, kind of just reconnecting yourself that it happened. I'm not a psychologist, but I'll tell you, there's several chapters in that book that your friend should read. And her daughter really owes it to herself to recognize that trauma is huge with this. Definitely a huge part.
Maybe irreversible damage.
Yes, that's another great one. Yeah.
So in the last couple of minutes, can you talk just a little bit more about your organizations and just real basic stuff like what's the website? How do people connect with you? And what if they don't live in Ohio? What if they live in Florida? What if they live in California? If there's a parent listening to this who is concerned about their child, what should they do?
So if they don't live here, like in our state, they go to parents of RGDKids.com, and they'll see a red bar on the top of that website, and it says click here to join a support group of parents in your area. And they have folks there that will connect them with people in their area. And also there's an international parent support. It's not a support group, but it's a parent group called GenSpect, GenSpect.org. And they're international. And they're bringing in parents from all different states too, because we have this case in our state where some of these parents are like way out in the middle of nowhere. So the only community they have is like a private Facebook group. So we do have stragglers, you know, from other states that are in our group for sure, that are just kind of, they don't have anybody. So we have our own group of parents that they can get support with. And then I have a lot of connections and ways to find help as well that are more remote through these different areas.
Right. And if you go to cardinalsupportnetwork.com, that's us, we have a contact page, and you fill out a survey. We collect some information about you and a little bit of information about your kid and where you are in the state. And we try to connect you with people who are relatively close by. Plus, we have an email list, and we do a newsletter. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. So we have lots of ways to try to connect people. However, we have gotten inquiries from as far away as New Zealand. So we can't necessarily help them, you know, with geographically speaking, but we have so much information out there that is hard science based that would help anybody from anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So last question, is there anything that either of you have wanted to say that I haven't given you the opportunity?
One thing that you might do is interview someone from GenSpect or try to get somebody from Segum to come in, because these are really the professionals. I would keep going, looking into these conversion therapy bans that are preventing therapists from helping kids in different cities. And it's just kind of coincidental that gender clinics are in that same area. it's just really great that you're letting us talk. Thank you.
Right.
Well, thanks for saying that. And one of the things that horrifies me about this whole issue, apart from, you know, lopping off healthy body parts, apart from the destruction of women's spaces in sports, apart from men being put into women's prisons, there's 1,200 men in California alone who have applied to be put into women's prisons, and the women are absolutely terrified.
It's despicable.
All of those things horrify me. But another thing that horrifies me about this is the complete destruction of discourse. And that, you know, okay, I'll just say it, you know, I don't really believe in a Christian God, but, you know, you and I can have a reasonable, rational conversation about your faith. And we can probably, one of my best friends, one of my neighbors, he's a Seventh-day Adventist pastor, you know, and we have delightful, and I was raised Seventh-day Adventist. And then, so I'm sort of post-Christian or something. I don't know. And we have kind of like your post-liberal, I don't know. Anyway, so we have just delightful conversations about he believes in the Seventh-day Adventist God, and we have wonderful conversations about, do you believe that God exists in trees? Is this tree part of God? And we have wonderful conversations. And I have wonderful conversations with a friend of mine who's a meth addict, for crying out loud. And yet this you can't talk about. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
The first time when we were first confronted with this from our kid, you start trying to find support. And the first thing that I found was a group on Facebook. I think it was private. You had to answer questions to get in it. But one of the rules was you're not allowed to question it. You're not allowed to question it. And I was in a panic. Initially, I think I was having a constant anxiety attack, and I'm like in this group and I'm watching the dialogue, such as it is. And I'm like, this can't be right. You can't ask any questions that would be counter to the ideology. I don't think I lasted in there longer than a week because it was so distressing. And it was like, there has to be some science. There must be a conversation about this. And it's not allowed. It's not allowed.
Well, that's because it's a cult. I'll just throw that in. I mean, yeah. I said that once. I'm like, no, it couldn't be. That's crazy. This is like 2021. They don't exist. And then I watched Scientology and I was like, oh my gosh, this is really similar. Because the kids aren't supposed to talk to me. My daughter's really estranged from me a lot of the times. I get punished and put in a timeout for using the wrong pronouns, even though they change. So I never really know. It's like playing basketball without any rules or goal. And the rules change and there's a new something or other, a new definition. And it's like, it's a cult, mostly because we do have so many estranged kids and runaways that they just say, oh, I found a family to live with and I found somebody to live with and they're going to take care of me. And Medicaid, like in Oregon, pays for all of this, all of the treatments. They have housing for these kids. And I can't even imagine living there.
We have to wrap this up, but I'm thinking of also something that Judith Herman, who wrote Trauma and Recovery, said to me about a characteristic of abusers of abusive situations, whether it's a political regime or a domestic violence situation, is the absolute imposition of lots of sometimes arbitrary and changing rules so that the victims are always off kilter. And the constantly changing pronouns makes me think of that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And identities.
So that's kind of a crap note to end on. So why don't the two of you say something really good to end on?
I think one thing I will say is that we've had a lot of parents in our group who've had some success. I mean, my kid is just one of them. Be persistent, find a good therapist, interview them like mad, get real help. And it is possible to come out of it. You just have to be patient and stick to your guns.
Yeah. And you do have to extend some grace to them as well and know that it's not the end, a really terrible tragedy like this isn't the end. It's recovery is possible. The human body and mind are just amazing things. And there's definitely hope out there. And there's people that are really working hard to turn the tide.
Thank you for all that. And I think I want to give my mom the last word. And my mom's dead, but she said to me many, many times when I would do something that was self-destructive, she would say, I don't agree with the decision you're making, but I will be here to pick up the pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
absolutely. We're the North Stars, and that's what that means. You just have to wait and be patient and love them. So.
Well, thank you so much for that. And thank you for your work in the world. And thank you for your work on behalf of children and gender nonconforming children and discourse and parents. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guests today have been Maria Polaris and Chris. Thank you. This is Resistance. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.